Good afternoon, everyone. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:32 p.m. on Tuesday, March 7th, 2023. We're meeting today in room 205 in the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Vice Chair Kaufman, Senator Dunbar, Senator Diesel, and Senator Tobin. We do have a quorum to conduct business today. We do have a few items on the agenda. First, we'll hold a confirmation hearing for Commissioner Designee Heidi Hedberg for the Department of Health and including public comment for her appointment. Then following that, we'll return to Senate Bill 8, repeal a certificate of need, and consider a committee substitute and look for the will of the committee. And lastly, we'll consider a CS, committee substitute, for Senate Bill 44, naturopath and licensing practices, and look for the will of the committee for that bill as well. At this time, we have Commissioner Designee Heidi Hedberg from the Department of Health here at the table to talk upon her qualifications, her credentials, and her reasons of wanting to be the commissioner confirmed for the Department of Health. So, Commissioner Designee, the floor is yours, and please proceed when you're ready.
For the record, my name is Heidi Hedberg, Commissioner Designee, and thank you very much for considering me for commissioner for the Department of Health. I would like to share with you just a little bit about myself, the work experience that has prepared me for this role, and the vision for the Department of Health. I was born in Utah. I was raised in Seattle. And in high school, I was an exchange student to Denmark. And I still remain very close with my host family. I moved to Alaska in 1995. And I attended Alaska Pacific University, where I graduated with an outdoor studies degree. That degree taught me many things, but most valuable, it taught me leadership. It taught me risk management, team building, and crisis management, skills that I have used throughout my various jobs. Several years after college, my husband and I, we paid off our student debt, and we saved up some money, and we traveled around the world for 8 months. And we hiked, we climbed, we kayaked some of the most beautiful rivers and mountains and visited amazing communities and countries. My husband is born and raised in Alaska, and we have two boys who are very active, one who loves rock climbing and one who loves biking. And in the summer, we spend a lot of our time on the weekends in Prince William Sound on our boat. Prior to state service, I spent 13 years in the nonprofit sector. And it was through those opportunities working for the nonprofits that really gave me an opportunity to travel out across the state, out to communities, and make connections. And those connections I have carried with me throughout my various jobs, and I think has really helped strengthen our partnerships that I carry today. From my years working for the Girl Scout Councils, where I was really empowering girls to lead through volunteer activities and directing programs, through recruiting and mentoring adults who were working with teenagers in student ministries at a large church, to learning how to make a blood component in managing large projects at a blood bank. Each of these nonprofits gave me new perspectives into the Alaskan ways and the healthcare system. For the past 13 years, and yes, it's both 13 and 13, I hit the magic transition. I have spent the last 13 years working within the Division of Public Health, again, in various positions. And each of those positions has given me a really unique perspective in government and how government works. I have been able to leverage those different jobs and travel out, and I have visited almost all of the hospitals. I have been able to forge stronger partnerships with our tribal health organizations and our federal agencies, and I really have seen firsthand some of the challenges that Alaskans face and our healthcare system. Specifically, the last 4 years, I was the director of public health. And while I was in that role, I represented the department in unified command. Unified command was with the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and the Department of Public Safety. And it was for the COVID-19 pandemic response. Leading through the global pandemic dealing with conflict and adversity, managing scarce resources, and overseeing a team that was exhausted and burnt out, it was a challenge. And it required a strong network of connections across the state, ability to quickly collect and assess information coming in, triage priorities, and understand how the state government works in order to accomplish things quickly. It required every day meeting it with optimism and creating an environment where teamwork and partnership were the key to success, because no one person or no one organization could do it all. Being the director of public health was probably one of my highlights of my career to date. It also stretched me and to do things that were very uncomfortable and not natural for me, and I really leaned into that with my faith. I'm incredibly thankful for the staff and for the partners that really positioned Alaska to fare much better than other states during the COVID pandemic response. Alaska had fewer deaths and fewer hospitalizations when you compare Alaska to the other rural states. In addition, because of our partnerships with our tribal health organizations, we worked together and we had a robust vaccine rollout plan, and we were ranked number one as a state for vaccines per capita for the first 4 months. All of these work experiences have shaped my life and prepared me for this new role. Now, as I look to the next 4 years and my vision for the Department of Health, it really is to increase the health, the well-being, and the self-sufficiency of Alaskans. And to do this, I want to leverage public health to be the chief health strategist. I want to address the gaps in the behavioral health continuum of care and the inefficient systems within public assistance. I'm going to look at caring for the ability to age in place and focusing on timely reimbursements to our Medicaid providers. With the desired outcomes that Alaskans will be healthier, our economy will be more vibrant, and the healthcare system will be more accessible and affordable. Public health has the strategies to better the health of Alaskans and communities. This requires paying for prevention. As we know, prevention is cheaper than treatment and a cost containment tool over time. Healthy Alaskans 2030 is the state health improvement plan. It is the roadmap, and it will help us as we improve in our most significant health issues that we're facing to date. The Division of Public Assistance output is at a low point right now. This is not a reflection of the dedicated staff. This is a reflection of the ineffective systems that are in place. These are historical challenges that have spanned multiple administrations and unfortunately has negatively impacted Alaskans. And while I cannot change the past, I can take responsibility now and I can better steward the resources moving forward. I'm in a much better position compared to my predecessors because of the department reorganization. There's a much smaller span of control, and so I have more time to focus in on specific divisions. I recognize that the public assistance IT systems need to be integrated, and we have a plan for that. I also recognize that the workflow management system needs to be fully implemented, and we are working towards that. And we need more staff and resources, and we have put a request in to the governor's amended budget. I also recognize that the staff need to feel seen, heard, valued, and safe. And they are passionate about their work, but they're not recognized for their efforts. When I look back over time, and I think about the behavioral health continuum of care, I realize that we've come a long way, but we also have a long way to go to address the gaps in the behavioral health continuum of care. I'm incredibly thankful for a strong leadership team within the Division of Behavioral Health and within the Commissioner's Office, and I will ensure and I will continue to support and address and ensure that Alaskans in a behavioral health crisis have the right resource at the right time. There have been steps that have been taken. I'm incredibly thankful to the legislature passing House Bill 172 last year, which was the crisis stabilization. Now, looking forward, we really need to spend our time and effort really ensuring that we can expand and fully implement those crisis stabilization services. In addition, aging in place with local resources for seniors or individuals with disabilities is another key to healthy families. When I started this position in November, I heard loud and clear from the advocacy groups the need to update the rate setting methodologies to increase the workforce and allow individuals with disabilities to choose their direct services. This will take work with the legislature, the department, and the advocacy groups, and we can make those changes as we work together so that our most vulnerable Alaskans have the highest quality life. Finally, healthcare services, they touch every aspect to the Medicaid program, from enrolling providers and background checks to the weekly check rates, which is about $45 million per week. I have a great team, and over the past 6 years, they have been able to save over $370 million through tribal reclaiming. I am committed to continuing to expand the tribal reclaiming in addition to other cost savings ideas that they have around pharmacy rebates. Last but not least, I really want to see the Governor's Healthy Family Initiative fully realized. Strong families are the foundation of the vibrant economy and community. And this is really building on healthy beginnings, improving access to healthcare and healthy communities. This is going to require working with the legislature, other departments, communities, businesses, updating policies, implementing new policy, and leveraging a variety of funding sources. In closing, what I bring to this role is organizational leadership, stability, innovation, and a team approach. Healthcare is very complex. It's critical to form a team that has a wide knowledge base and skill set that complements each other because no one person can know it all. The last 3 years have been incredibly pivotal, living and leading through a global pandemic that disrupted the workforce and the supply chain, a department cyber attack that took down all of our IT systems, and a department reorganization. That was an intense 3 years, and it really highlighted our strengths and areas for improvements. And over the next 4 years, I really want to address those gaps, and I really want to ensure that we're focusing on the health, the well-being, and self-sufficiency of Alaskans. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there questions from committee members to Commissioner Designee Hedberg? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, Commissioner Designee Hedberg, for being here today. Just because we have you here in front of us, I would like a little more detail on where we're at with food stamps. And you mentioned some of the things that have been done. How far through the backlog are we? I know all of us, certainly my office, is receiving a lot of folks reaching out that are in various states of desperation, and so could you give us a little more info on that?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that's a great question. So we've done multiple activities. I'll try to remember them all. First, when it comes down to the backlog, so we have a dedicated team of 16 eligibility technicians, and they have been working methodically through the oldest applications first. Parallel to that planning, our IT staff programmed the EIS system, the eligibility information system, to roll benefits for February, March, and April. Essentially what that did was it created a backstop. It stopped the backlog from continuing. That team of 16, it takes about an hour for them to process that SNAP recertification. If you do the math, we're anticipating around 2 months, but they've actually been doing really well. I've been impressed. How quickly they've been able to tackle it. So right now, last week, they were a little over 5,000, and this week, they're a little over 4,000. So So they really are focusing in. I think a lot of them are working overtime to address the SNAP recertification backlog. Parallel planning to that, we are also working on IT reprogramming to move from a 6-month certification period to a 12-month certification period. And right now we are going to go there. They started in January. They're going to be testing this spring. We need, updated policies and to train the staff. And the go live date is around July. And that is progressing and that is on track. In addition, we want to make sure that Alaskans have access. Another method to access to apply for SNAP applications. And so we have a team that has been working on an online SNAP application, and that go live is December of 2023. In addition, we've been working on just the communication, making sure that we're following up with constituents and that we're reaching out in multiple ways, answering the media questions, reaching out to radio and other social media, just trying to get the word out, kind of like, what's caused it, what's the backlog, and where we're at.
Great follow-up,
Mr. Chair. Sandra Dunbar.
So for those not on in the backlog who might be applying right now, what's their expected wait time? If you were to file an application right now, because let's say you had a family disaster and now you need to apply for food stamps, about how long do you think it would take?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, that's a great question. It's really hard to estimate. So all of our public assistance programs are impacted. They're experiencing various levels of delay. What we are focusing on right now is we've triaged the SNAP recertification. They've already qualified for SNAP, so we want to make sure that they continue. We are focusing and working on a team that's trained just to Medicaid. So we have a team focusing on the Medicaid redetermination process. So we're carving out a team. A lot of it goes down to workforce. And so we have been receiving a lot of applications, but our bottleneck was on the training aspect. So we worked with our training team, and they've been able to move from 12 or 16 to now 32 in two different cohorts of training. So now we have a higher throughput for training our staff. And we're focusing on specific programs, and then we'll move back in sort of a generalist where they know all of the various public assistance programs. So I can't tell you if you apply today, if it's going to take a week, a month, or longer to get those benefits, because it also really depends on the income and the program that you're applying for. I just recognize that we have a backlog and we're triaging it and sort of methodically going through and, again, preparing for April 1st and the redetermination process, but then focusing on the backlog and then the initial applications and processing the oldest first.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no further questions, we'll now open up to public testimony. Is there anyone here in the room in general that wishes to testify? We do have one individual. You can come on up, Ms. Jeannie. Place yourself on the record and begin when you're ready.
Hello, my name is Jeannie Monk, and I'm Senior Vice President with the Alaska Hospital and Healthcare Association. And thanks for giving me a chance to share a few words about Commissioner Designee Heidi Hedberg. On behalf of AHA, I'm very pleased to have a chance to offer our support. As I listened to Heidi describe her career path with the state, I realized that I've been fortunate to work with her in all of her different roles. So I've been working with her for approximately the past 12 years, and I can assure you that everything she describes in her experience has been true to my in my workings with her and reflects her strengths in a very accurate way. Heidi is committed to the health of Alaskans and has worked very hard in every role she's had with the state. She is willing to take on challenges and work to find solutions. Part of her success has been her willingness to build relationships and strong partnerships to get work done. I think an important strength, as she mentioned, that she will bring to the role of commissioner is a deep understanding of the challenges of rural Alaska. As she mentioned, she has traveled to all corners of the state, and I've been fortunate to be with her on some of those trips to hospitals. She understands rural health, and she's really willing to work with communities to address their needs. I believe that Commissioner Designee Hedberg has been and will continue to be a great partner with hospitals and nursing homes. We may not always agree with all of her decisions, but we're confident that she will be fair and that she'll involve stakeholders in the process whenever possible, and that she'll focus on the best needs of Alaskans in all of her work. So we offer our unwavering support for her as part of this confirmation process. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else here in the room in general wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to our LIOs and off-net folks. We have a Vernay, is it Burner? And then followed by Nancy Merriman. Vernay, if you could expect 2 minutes for your testimony, then you may begin when you're ready.
Arigateku, can you hear me?
Yes, if you can place yourself on the record and please start your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Wilson, and distinguished members of the committee. For the record, my name is Vernay Conoff Burner. I'm addressing you today on my own behalf as an Alaskan resident. I'm honored and proud to speak in support of Heidi Hedberg's confirmation as Commissioner for the Department of Health. I am a second-year PhD student in epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Prior to my studies, I worked with Heidi in some of the most challenging and rewarding conditions. As a testimonial, I will highlight our work together in response to the COVID-19 pandemic when I served as the president and CEO for the Alaska Native Health Board. During this time, Heidi demonstrated exceptional leadership skills and great insight. We all faced extreme scarcity in terms of information, supplies, resources, and even communication. Yet, as the then director of the Division of Public Health, she deftly sought out partnerships that put Alaskans first. She dedicated countless hours around the clock to build those partnerships. She collaborated to develop new guidelines and craft a pandemic response that supported communication and integrated responses between state, tribal, and local partners. Her priority was to protect Alaskans from across the state, from the city centers to our most remote villages. Heidi's leadership was matched by her collaborative spirit, free from ego. She was strategic and placed emphasis on building from the strengths and assets of Alaska. Heidi will be the first to recognize the hard work of the many who came together and put Alaska at the top of the nation in protecting our people. Countless lives were saved when we were at our most vulnerable. I strongly support Heidi Hedberg's confirmation. Thank you. Take a look back.
Thank you, Renee, for your testimony. Next, we have Nancy Merriman from the Alaska Primary Care Association. You can place yourself on the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony, please.
Thank you, Senator Wilson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nancy Merriman. I'm CEO of the Alaska Primary Care Association. APCA supports the development and operations of Alaska's 29 community health centers, also known as federally qualified health centers, or FQHCs. It's my pleasure today to express our support for Heidi Hedberg's confirmation to serve as the Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Health. We have appreciated her authentic partnership with us for so many years on activities including emergency preparedness and management, COVID response, fostering collaboration between public health and FQHCs, and identifying new opportunities to strengthen Alaska's healthcare safety net. She has a wealth of knowledge and experience that leads to strong collaboration that's results-oriented. Decades of research demonstrate and support the value and importance of primary care, that kind of healthcare that meets patients where they are, that gets to know who they really are, and that addresses not only their medical and clinical needs, but also their social drivers of health and connects people to resources. This is the kind of healthcare that FQHCs are committed to and live out every day for their patients. And over the course of many years of working with Commissioner Designee Hedberg, I can attest that this is also the kind of community healthcare that she believes in. She has deep awareness in the ability to improve health and wellness through affecting economic status, education, housing, and food security of Alaskans. Ms. Hedberg's perspective gained from years in emergency preparedness and response, public health, and the breadth of state health programming and responsibilities is important and will inform her leadership and strategic planning for the Department of Health. She has seen how all the separate, distinct, and sometimes siloed pieces of state government affect Alaskan families and have direct and indirect impacts on lives. Commissioner Designee Hedberg is a strong public health and community health leader in Alaska, and we support her appointment as commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy, for your testimony. Next, we have Neil Andresen, the ED from the Alaska Municipal League.
Hi, thank you. My name is Neil Andresen. For the record, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. While AML doesn't traditionally comment on appointed positions at the state, I do want to take some time just to express how grateful I am to the work of Commissioner Designee Heidi Hedberg in her capacity as the Director of Public Health these last few years. AML hasn't participated actively in public health much in our history, and the work that she did to foster and maintain collaboration and partnership during and in response to the public health emergency is truly impressive, and it remains the case that we've built a partnership that I think will benefit local governments and communities into the future. Even while AML hasn't done much in public health in our past, we're looking today at social determinants of health and supporting communities in new and different ways, and I think that's entirely due to Heidi's perseverance and her leadership within the department. I will also note that during much of that time, Heidi has been steadfast in participating in weekly and biweekly and monthly calls with local government officials, answering really hard questions. And where we don't always agree, we at least know, and I think it's important that we know, that we're committed to the same goals, objectives, and overall strategies for getting Alaska to improved public health. And I appreciate the work that she's done and has the potential to do in her position. Thank you.
Thank you, Nielsen. Thank you for everyone who testified. Seeing no one else on the line, we will go ahead and close public testimony. Is there any further questions for Commissioner Designee? Cookies of preference? Okay. Seeing none, is there a motion to move the name of this appointee out of committee? Senator Kaufman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the appointment of Heidi Hedberg as Commissioner of the Department of Health to be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This does not reflect the intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions.
All right. Is there any opposition? Any objection? All right. Seeing none, we will move the appointment to be forwarded to joint session. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork and bring up our next presenter. We are back on the record. Our next item of business is Senate Bill 8, the Repeal of Certificate of Need Program by my office. We heard an overview on this bill on February 9th, took invited and public testimony on February 16th, and before you this afternoon is a work draft 33-LS0135-B. And before us is my trustee aide, Mr. Gary Zepp, to go over the committee substitute, but before that, is there a motion to adopt the city substitute for discussion?
Yes, there is, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt work draft 33-LS0135 B as our working document.
All right, I'll object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Zeck, if you can place yourself on the record and talk a little bit about what the CS does.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman and committee members, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Gary Zapp, staff to Senator David Wilson. And before you in version B of Senate Bill 8, the explanation of changes from version A to B, they're pretty simple. In sections 5, 11, and 12 are basically name changes from the Department of Family and Community Services to the Department of Health. And I'll start on page 4, line 14. That's section 5. That's the first change in name. The second change in name is on page 6, line 4, and also on line 10. And again, that's to remove the Department of Family and Community Services reference and replace that with the Department of Health and all three of those places. And the last change, Mr. Chairman and committee members, is on page 6, line 15, and it changes the effective date from July 1st, 2026 to July 1st, 2028. And those are the changes contained within the work draft before you.
Thank you. Are there any questions upon the CS changes? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the thinking behind pushing it out to 2028?
Senator Dunbar, that was to as a compromise to allow other hospitals to help recoup costs and to plan for a future end date of the certificate of need program, and allows the department to come up with additional regulations that may be needed in pre-place for hospital accreditations.
Can I ask a follow-up to that, Mr.
Yes.
Chair? You said allow hospitals to recoup costs. What costs do you anticipate resulting from this change?
This was a conversation with many organizations not to recoup costs, but if hospitals made investments, allows them to sort of, I don't want to say have a monopoly, but that's pretty much what they would continue to have, is to be able to be that sole provider without allowing other people to enter the marketplace in case they made significant investments of services, to allow that opportunity for them to have that opportunity to recoup some of that cost of their initial investment without that additional competition into the marketplace. Thank you. All right. Seeing no other questions, I'll move my objection of adopting the work draft. Is there any other objection to the work draft version B before the committee now? Seeing none, the work draft B is now before us. Thank you. I should look at my script. Are there any final comments on any questions on Senate Bill 8? And also here available to answer questions, we also have Heather Carpenter, the policy advisor for the Department of Health. Yes, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we got some a presentation last time and some studies from a particular sort of libertarian think tank, Mercatus, I think, about, you know, comparing different states. But the research that I still would like to see is, you know, when these changes are made, because some states have done this, right? They've repealed CON, Certificate of Need. To what degree have costs fallen in those states? I don't know if we have anything prepared on that now, but I think that's, as I say, I'm concerned about the unintended consequences from this bill, and it's one of those things that to me sounds like very good in theory, and, you know, I was an economics major and certainly don't like monopolies. On the other hand, we've heard some opposition about that this will lead to sort of the most profitable procedures being pulled out of hospitals, sort of high graded, and not lead to lower costs. And I guess I'd like to see more information about the degree to which this has actually lowered. Do we have evidence that, you know, here's a state repealed certificate of need and then the cost of healthcare fell?
I have had conversations with our insurer, Premier Blue Cross. And the gentleman who came in, who represents this region, has over 20 plus years of experience in the insurance market, and said that in his professional experience, he has never seen a healthcare consolidation of services reduce the cost of healthcare. It has only increased the cost of healthcare. We've always asked any healthcare organization that says that they're having financial troubles or woes to please show us your, present your financial statements, produce your financial records, so we can look at them and have that talk. And we can talk about your return on investments and look at your ROI, ROEs, and to see what the actual cost is to provide services. And that's something that many hospitals and agencies will just won't give what's their true cost of healthcare services. And that's something that we're working on other means and methods throughout this legislative process. But this is just an opportunity to have one less barricade, and the next committee of referral, if this were to pass, this committee is Senate Labor and Commerce, which we can be more than happy to continue to provide a little bit more on the labor and the economics of that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other further discussion on Senate Bill 8? Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do notice in today's packet there is a collection of letters from the Pacific Health Coalition, and I am slightly confused about these two letters.
Let me take an Eddie's. We are back on the record. Yes, there was a letter of support, and then that letter was withdrawn, and I would urge committee members to contact that individual and to have that further dialogue on the why, because the letter says without further comment. And so without further comment, that's the only way to further understand that situation. With that, any other comments or questions? Is there a motion to move bill from committee? Senator Kaufman.
I have a motion, Mr. Chair. I move CS for SB 8 version B from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Their objection? Hearing none. Senate Bill 8 moves to next committee referral. We'll take an at ease, sign paperwork, and we'll get ready for our next presentation. We are back on the record, and before us is our last piece of business this afternoon. At this time, we have Senate Bill 44 before us, Naturopath, a piece of legislation. We do have a CS before the committee. At this time, is there a motion to adopt the CS? Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a motion. I move to adopt Work Draft 33-LS0297/S as our working document.
and I will object for purposes of conversation. And before us, we have Ms. Jane Conway, Staff to Senator DeGiesel, here to speak upon the changes in the CS.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. This is Jane Conway, Staff to Senator Kathy Giesel. The original version you had before you last week was version B. The CS is now version S, and I'm going to go through the changes that we have made in this document. So starting on page 2, lines 23 and 24, the advisory board composition was changed, and it is now to be comprised of 2 NDs, naturopaths, 1 pharmacist, 1 MD or OD, and 1 public member. So in essence, we reduce the public members from 2 to 1, reduce the NDs from 3 to 2, and added 1 pharmacist and 1 doctor. Moving on to page 4, line 4 regarding the externship, we remove the requirement for the externship program for the naturopath licensure. The term is confusing, not known to many, and unnecessary. Other medical providers with the same level of authority the NDs are requesting in this bill are not required to match or emulate the MD or OD internship process. The training for NPs, nurse practitioners, is most commensurate with that of NDs, having similar clinical hours, and neither one has a required residency. Going on to page 6, line 13, this added vaccines to the list of services that a licensed naturopath may provide. Page 6, line 19, we deleted the word surgical to clarify this sentence, which only means that a licensed naturopath may treat superficial lacerations, abrasions, and lesions. We did this because the word surgical can be mistaken to infer procedures that the naturopaths are not seeking to perform. Page 6, line 26, replaces the word ultrasound with the word imaging. There are several types of imaging that a naturopath may wish to order. Other types of imaging could be an X-ray, MRI, a CT scan, ultrasound, EKG, and perhaps other tests that would assist them in diagnosing their patients. And again, the same thing in page 6, line 30, we replace the word ultrasound with the word imaging. Those are all the changes that were made in the CS version S.
Are there questions for Ms. Conway or the sponsor, Senator Giesel? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS?
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment I'd like to... Okay, thank you.
Seeing none, the CS is adopted and is our working document before us. And I believe we have a further amendment. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe it's being distributed to members
take
now.
Take a brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 1.
I'll object. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm realizing that this amendment was drafted for the original and not for the S version. And so there are slight slightly off in a couple cases. But if you'll follow with me to page 4, the amendment references line 5 through 7. It's actually line 4 through 6 now. The intent of this amendment is it does not remove pharmaceutical powers, to be clear, or I'm sorry, prescriptive powers to naturopaths, but rather removes it as a requirement to perform. So as it currently stands, we have naturopaths here in Alaska that do not have prescriptive authority. And but this bill would require them to seek prescriptive authority and pass an exam. And so the intent of the amendment is to delete the portion that makes it a requirement to pass this examination. And then later on in the document, add, which is on page 6, line 27, add the ability to write the prescription. So basically an attempt to turn a shall to a may, where naturopaths may use prescriptive authority and take this exam and get it, but doesn't force them to, as the current version of the bill does. So that's the purpose of the bill, and I believe my colleague, Kiesel, might have some some discussion points to be made about it.
Well, is there further comments on amendment number one? Senator DeGiesel?
Certainly, I would be happy to comment. I also know that there could be Dr. Clyde Jensen online. He is the gentleman that actually instructs naturopaths in pharmacology and may have a comment.
Yes. Dr. Jensen, are you with us?
Dr. Jensen, I was unable to hear the question.
The question is, any comments on amendment number one?
Understanding is that amendment number one is to reword the bill to make it so that those naturopaths who do not wish to sit for an examination that would allow them to prescribe will not be forced to do that. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, certainly I believe that if a naturopath does not wish to prescribe, they don't have to. Would seem to me, however, that we wish to remove as many obstacles as possible to allow those who wish to prescribe and are capable of prescribing to do so. So my thought would be if that additional amendment makes it more difficult or creates unnecessary obstacles, I would just encourage you to be mindful of that.
Right. And Dr. Jensen, just have a question. Or maybe this is for the bill sponsor, for the sponsor of the amendment. So they would remove the requirement for the pharmaceutical examination. Is that correct?
A requirement to be a naturopath, but not a requirement to have prescriptive authority. So if you look at the final portion of this amendment, you see that it inserts on page 6, write prescriptions if the person has passed a pharmaceutical examination. So if you want prescriptive authority, you'd still have to pass a pharmaceutical examination.
And I guess my question then for Dr. Jensen is there a benefit for a naturopath to that still may not want to prescribe but still to pass the pharmaceutical examination?
I am personally not aware of a benefit that would be derived from that. If they choose not to prescribe, they wouldn't have to. If they did not wish to prescribe and chose not to take the examination, they would not have to.
Yes, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what we ask, what we have the authority to do as the legislature is to protect the public. That's the purpose of our regulatory boards. They are quasi-adjudicatory, and their purpose is to protect the public. So in this section, we are saying that the department shall issue a license to practice naturopathy to an applicant who has passed a pharmaceutical exam approved by the department that is equivalent to any examination of pharmaceutical knowledge required under ASO 864, and then there's two subsections there. ASO 864 is the medical, are the medical statutes. So when a naturopath is providing healthcare services, they are not confining their services to individuals who are not consuming or prescribed any other pharmaceuticals. Naturopaths tend to generally recommend herbal preparations, vitamins, minerals, etc., which may be ingested or injected, that you see vaccines in there. These all have the potential of interacting or creating side effects when interacting with pharmaceuticals that the individual is also on. That's why it's incumbent and protecting the public to require the naturopaths to also demonstrate pharmaceutical knowledge. This requirement documents that the state has examined this individual and asserts that, yes, in fact, they do have equivalent pharmaceutical knowledge to those who are licensed under medical statutes. Now, Dr. Jensen is an instructor of pharmacology, and he has testified in the past that the pharmacologic training for an individual, pharmacological education, I'm sorry, puppies and ponies are trained. People are educated regardless. He's asserted that that education is equivalent, that he actually instructs simultaneously medical physicians as well as naturopathic doctors. So that's the rationale. It's public safety that we are wanting to document here. That is the purpose of a regulatory board. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further, Senator Tobin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is a question for the amendment sponsor. So just to ensure I'm understanding what the anticipation is are you assuming there will be two licenses, one with an endorsement and one without, and how will we ensure that folks adhere to what they are provided the ability to do? Who will be checking, who will be ensuring that there is someone not operating outside of the bounds of what their license permits them to act?
I think it would probably be the same group that currently enforces it. I mean, right now, if a naturopath practices and tries to use prescriptive authority, presumably there is a regulatory agency that would come down on them. Similarly, I think if a naturopath was using prescriptive authority without taking one of these exams, that same regulatory body I would envision pursuing them. And I think that, I appreciate the conversations I've had with Senator Guisol, and I think that she has evidence that most naturopaths would go down this route and would seek prescriptive authority. But there has been some concern presented to me by members of the public that we shouldn't force this on folks. That being said, I'll say that I appreciate the changes that were made in this CS and also the rationale that Senator Guisol has put forward. And while I would like to give more flexibility to the naturopath community, I also recognize the need for public safety if we make this change. So with that, I think I will withdraw my amendment and just say that I am grateful that we had this discussion on the record. And I appreciate the changes that were made in the substitute version. Do you need any other further action to withdraw an amendment, Mr. Chair?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
All right, with amendment number one withdrawn and no other amendments, that brings the CS before us for further consideration. Are there any other comments for Senate Bill 44? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Vice Chair Kaufman.
I have
I move CS for SB 44 version S from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, so the CS for Senate Bill 44 moves to the next committee referral, and we'll take a brief at ease to do some paperwork. All right. That thus ends our business for today. Are there any further committee comments? On Thursday, we'll return to several bills that we'll look for the will of the committee. We have Senate Bill 51 that controls substance data, veterinary exemption, SB 53, the five-year involuntary commitments, and Senate Bill 57, the adult home care medical assistance. And then we also have a new bill, Senate Bill 59, which may or may not be ready yet, depending on the administration's verbiage. We may have a CS for that bill to consider, and a CS also for the five-year voluntary commitments to consider as well. At this time, we are adjourned at 4:31 p.m.